Kia ora and welcome to this week's No Nay Never podcast. I'm Isabella.
And I'm Toby, and we're from New Zealand.
We are the guest introducers this week. What's coming up?
Hello and welcome to the No Nay Never podcast. Firstly, thanks to Isabella and Toby from New Zealand for this week's introduction. Today I've got with me Kev and Natalie to talk about yet another away game without a win, a 0-0 draw at Middlesbrough. Natalie, where do we start? Yet again, failed to capitalise on an opportunity at a side that are probably one of the more beatable teams for us on the road. What's your feeling after the game?
My feeling is one of extreme positivity, and I actually felt really good after that result, and I don't share the doom and gloom this week about the lack of an away win. I think at the end of the day, we've all accepted that it's probably not going to happen this season. But it's another point. And I think the main thing that we have to think about this game is that every single point in this league away from home is a bonus point, because it's one of the toughest, if not the toughest leagues in the world to get anything away from home. And at the end of the day, we went to Middlesbrough, who have a little bit more about them than Sunderland do. And they are absolutely fighting for their lives. And a win against us was the last chance saloon for them. If they got beat, they were pretty much relegated anyway. And as it stands, a draw is probably not enough for them anyway. But they really had to fight for their lives for this game. And Burnley had to put in a very, very disciplined graft of a performance to grind a result out. And actually, a result for us a draw for us was a very important result. If we'd have gone there just trying to just... I know I said this last week, I wanted him to be positive and go for the win. But I actually changed my mind with the game on Saturday and the result and where that leaves us in the division. I think at this stage in the season, we have to really just knuckle down now and make sure we get the job done. Do you know, in previous podcasts, when I've expressed some frustration, I guess, with lack of discipline in the dying minutes of a game and how we've conceded goals. Well, you use the same analogy into the dying games of this season. We've pretty much got the job done now. And I think I was perhaps naive last week when I was saying that I just wanted them to go out there, just go for it and be positive and try and get a win. Why? Just to say that we actually got a win away from home this season. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter. The points are on the board. And I think if we now just keep focused and get this job done, I think that's more important than whether or not it's an away point or an away win.
I think I'm going to echo much of what you said there, actually, now. I think in the previous podcast, I said that we should be going there looking for a draw, and that's what we got. I think it was a very good result all round. I think it's what we needed from this game. And who's the other away game we've got coming up that's winnable?
Palace away.
Yes, Palace. So those two games, I think we should be going to both of those expecting to get at least a point. And I think a point is absolutely good enough in these games now. It's got to that stage in the season where it's the home games now that are going to secure a fit. If for some reason we were to go down, it would be our home games that sealed it. But I don't think we are. I think we're pretty much safe now. And that was a decent enough result for us. And even make it even better is that it pretty much relegates Middlesbrough.
Kevin.
If they were to have any chance, any chance at all of staying up, then beating us was a must win, and we didn't. So Patrick Bamford would have been crying in his car after the match, getting ready for. He'll have been wondering which Premier League club he can not score for next season.
Kevin, you've brought the sass to this episode.
Boom boom.
I hope Bamford's not a listener, otherwise he probably will be crying in his car again.
Yeah, I don't think it.
Bamford,
think he is.
You are rubbish.
I think we're pretty
pathetic.
Safe in our assumption that he is not a listener of a Burnley podcast.
I'm surprised by getting back to the game. I'm surprised by the amount of positivity, practically teeming from both of you. I know you said there, Bromers, that a win's maybe not essential on the road, but. Do you not think it's going to have some sort of impact on next season if we come through this campaign having not managed it? And again, we saw Andre Gray brought off early in a game where, you know, a half chance could have done it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess the 2 points there. The first one about going into next season, Kevin mentioned this, I think it was in a couple of podcasts ago, where he had some real concerns that there was going to be a psychological barrier, and if it spilled into next season, then if we didn't get the results, if we let the away form carry on into next season and we didn't manage to get the home results that we've been getting this season, or indeed teams do find us out, then we're probably going to get relegated next season if that happens. I'm not saying we will, I'm saying if that happens. And I know Kevin expressed some concerns about that. And yeah, I do share that. This, you can only take one season at a time. And where we are at this moment in time, we are assessing the first time that we've managed back-to-back Premier League seasons, assuming that it goes that way. So if we analyse this season, we say, yes, it doesn't really matter where those points have come from. We've survived and we build again and we go again next season. Now, on the flip side of that is, if we don't manage to get that away win this season and it becomes a psychological problem, what does Dyche do over the summer to get that psychological barrier out of the players' heads and to actually turn it around next season? Is it a player issue? Is it a psychological issue? Is it just the nature of the Premier League? You know, it most teams know that they have to win their home games to have any hope of surviving, or indeed at the top end, getting into the top six. So there's probably only, let's say the top 12 finish top 12 because they do win all of their home games. That only leaves seven more, including, assuming we're in the bottom eight sides, that only leaves seven opportunities for an away win. So, you know, if you win two or three of those, then that's fine. You're only talking about potentially here winning two or three games as opposed to drawing four. You know, it's the balance isn't that far away from where we are now. So, yeah, I do understand that point, Birdie, and I don't want it to become a psychological problem. But I do wonder whether this is being made much more of an issue than it actually is. When you actually analyse the figures and how many away wins you should expect to get in one season, I'm not entirely sure we're that far off in terms of points.
Interesting. Potentially. I do feel it is a problem if we can't, coming into next season, get, you know, the same sort of home form we've had this season, then it could obviously impact.
Yeah, well, that's
the
worry, isn't it? Of course.
Also in the game, we saw, as you alluded to, I think earlier, we invited a lot of pressure again late on. I think it's probably fair to say Middlesbrough had, you know, the better of the chances. And yet again, our defence had to work hard to keep us in the game. But it looked like we maybe kept our concentration a little more than we normally do. What do you think, Kevin?
Yeah, obviously, you know, we've kept the clean sheet, which is the ultimate demonstration of our defence's performance and their concentration. That said, I don't think Middlesbrough offered anything massively significant. They got a little bit more urgency to in the last 15-20 minutes or so, brought a couple of subs on, which did have a positive impact. But obviously, Matt Lawton was very impressive, blocking it off the line a couple of times. But other than that, I don't think they offered masses. I do think that throughout the whole game, Lawton and Ward were absolutely outstanding. They're probably two players who I think maybe at the start of the season, were the two of the players you'd be, from the back line, you'd be thinking could be replaced. And I think certainly a few times on the podcast, we talked about it only being a matter of time before Flanagan came in for one of them. Maybe earlier in the season, when Middlesbrough did make those positive changes and did have a bit more urgency, maybe earlier in the season, they do go on and score. I think we defended very professionally towards the end, and those two were a big part of that.
Yeah, I think it's encouraging to see that we've learnt maybe from completely turning off in those situations and ultimately costing us some goals. I think, Natalie, you had one response to your tweet asking for topics to talk about this week that did cover the sort of back four. Talking on what we think of the season at whole, do you want to go through what we're asked to discuss?
We did. Well, John, apologies if this is a really bad pronunciation of your last name, but John Gibout tweeted us to say, how does the current defence, back four and keeper, compare to past defences? At least three, if not four, are viable candidates for player of the year. and the other is probably the most improved. And John, that is so true. I think I've been trying to decide who my player of the season is so far, and I genuinely have the three shortlisted are Heaton, Keane and me, and I can't quite decide which one to go for. But all five of them have been absolutely spectacular. And one of the things that James talked about before we started recording this evening, I'm sure he'll elaborate on it, is our part of the reasons for our relegation the last two Premier League seasons has been our weak defence, and that's just not there this season. All of the match reports have picked up on this week against the Middlesbrough game, and have basically said that, you know, no matter how, well, I guess Middlesbrough are pretty lacklustre up front anyway, aren't they? But all they were doing was just sort of hoofing aimless balls in a very weak crosses. And a lot of the national media have picked up on the fact that that's never, ever going to get past our back five, and especially our two centre-halves, who are very strong, very resilient and are very good in the air. And you're just not going to get past them. I think we saw, I think Kevin put it in our chat, the Non and Never Team chat. I think we were talking about an article, and Kevin probably be able to again tell us where this came from. But I think it was an interview with a former player, it might have been Stephen Caldwell, when they were talking about previous defences and previous squads and how the current squad fares to those. And I genuinely think that this has been the best back five that we have had in any three seasons. I can't think that. I mean, certainly the 2009 defence was quite weak, I think. The 2 years ago it was much better, but I think this one's just, you know, class. We've got two of them in the England squad, for goodness sake, and one of them who is widely touted to be probably the centre half that we take to the World Cup. So, you know, potentially one of the best two centre halves in the country. So yeah, for me they're absolutely amazing.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, our defence, like you say, was certainly better last time. And you look at, we had obviously Kieran Trippier was absolutely fantastic, but we had Ben Mee at left back, and we know that he is much better in the centre since we've seen that change. We had Michael Duff playing the majority of the season. Again, he was a fantastic player for us. I thought he did very, very well. But even with Jason Shackle as well, obviously we've seen what's happened to his career since he left Burnley. It's not been well, anywhere near the level of career highs that his replacements, Michael Keane and Ben Mee have seen. So you look across that back four, I think probably the only, the back five as well, even Tom Heaton is a better player, I think, now than he was 2 years ago. Probably the only player from that back five who would, from last time around, who would get into our team now is Kieran Trippier.
It's a completely different generation, isn't it? It's funny to think back then. You look at that 2009 defence, and actually we were all so giddy the first season we were in the Premier League, and after a really good first half when, you know, we were all very excited and momentum was still with us, we were genuinely thinking we were going to stay up. And you look back now at those squads and you just think, well, yeah, that's why we got relegated. You kind of feel like you're a little bit naive, don't you? And I think
Brian Jensen.
Exactly. I mean, I think I've said this before on the podcast. One of the things that I see in Middlesbrough are, you know, they are one of the strongest sides to come with. They weren't a weak side. They could have potentially done it. But I've seen a lot of their tactics and a lot of their spending and a lot of their play that reminds me of us the first couple of times we went up. And I think they honestly thought that they were going to come up and stay up and that would be it. Then they'd be back because they were one of the original members of the Premier League. They have been in the league. They've done obviously very well. But it has been quite a few years since they've been up here, and the division's changed. And I think there's a naivety to newly promoted sides for the first time that they get promoted, or the first time in a long time that they're in that. And we were just as guilty of that in 2009 and 2014. And it's only this year with this squad and the tactics and the infrastructure and the manager that I'm starting to see just how weak we were the other two seasons and why we didn't stay up. And we've definitely improved. We've definitely moved on, and we've definitely learned our lessons from then.
Well, that was maybe a little bit more comprehensive than I anticipated.
Is that okay? Hopefully we answered that well enough for them.
I think all good points. For me, the key thing has maybe been that we've kept a regular back four over both the promotion season and into this season, and obviously just the amount of young talent there is there. which is fantastic. Just to bring it back to the Borough game, we did see a few changes to the lineup from last week. Natalie, were you a bit shocked to see Vaux come back out the side and Barnes come in?
Fuming.
Yes, and absolutely fuming. This is always a really difficult piece of analysis, and I understand some fans who get frustrated at us and with the whole "In Deitch We Trust" hashtag, which obviously just gets thrown around quite a lot. And obviously it worked, and obviously we got a very good point, and obviously that was fine, but we just looked a completely different side at home to Stoke when he actually played Vaux, and we looked like we were going to create a little bit more. And that Vaux Gray partnership just works so well. It works so much better than Gray Barnes does. And Barnes is such an effective impact sub when he comes off the bench. And we saw that against Stoke, and he actually got us over the line against Stoke, and he managed to break up that last 10-minute momentum. He managed to make it awkward for Stoke and to stop them from trying to grab a last-minute winner. Equaliser. So I was very surprised to see Deitch change it again. And I think he just... It's really hard to not question... Well, it's really hard to question him, I guess, but it just screams to me that he was going again for a 0-0 draw. And whilst it worked this time, it's such a risky strategy, because if they'd have come out and we'd have just had a bit of lapse in concentration and we go one or two goals down, that's it. You've lost the game. You're never getting back into it, especially away from home. So, yeah, I just don't understand.
Yeah, I was similarly very disappointed. I'm a big... I've talked a lot this season about how I think they're quite even in terms of their ability and probably their effect on the game. But I think I agree with Barnes. I think I'd much prefer to see him coming off the bench and making that impact. And I think you look back at the impacts that Ashley Barnes has had. You look at some of his biggest moments in a Burnley shirt, and the majority of them, I think, have come from the bench. Barnes is that sort of impact player. He's come in often physically and literally give the opposition a very strong physical impact. Whereas Vaux, I think, is much better at giving us that shape and structure, which is something that works better from the start, and it's a lot more difficult to come in and then add at a later time, later into the game. It's something that works better as built the game being built around that. So it's disappointing. Obviously, there's some thinking in there from Sean Dyche, and we've got another point on the road, so we can't complain too much, because I think that was Sean Dyche's intention, and that's what happened. So if that was his intention, it worked. But purely from a spectacle and from a fan's perspective, it was disappointing for me.
For me, the Vaux and Gray thing is a bit frustrating. It's clear that Vaux and Gray are the best partnership. And when we start with Barnes and Gray, I know we've seen it work a little bit against Sunderland at home, but even we start with that, I'd rather we took Barnes off for Vaux at some point in the game. And it just continues to perplex me why we'd take Gray off and put Vaux and Barnes together, which to me just looks disjointed and doesn't seem to really offer much. Obviously, the other big change to the lineup was Brady back in starting on the correct side of the field. I think it's fair to say that he's got off to a mixed start. At the club, obviously a great goal in his first game against Chelsea, but apart from that, I think it was a really poor game for him. We've seen that he's obviously played quite a bit on the right and again has been poor. His end product's really been lacking. But we saw with Jeff Hendrick that, you know, how he grew into playing for Burnley, and it took him maybe a month or so of feeling like he wasn't that good and maybe wasn't worth the money we paid for him before he obviously scored that screamer against Bournemouth. And I think since that point, he's been far better. I mean, do you think it's important that Brady gets the opportunity to start games at this stage, particularly now if, as we're all saying, we should be safe, you know, wins on the road aren't as important?
I think so. I think one of the criticisms you could put Brady's way is that he's not. I don't think he's particularly fit into the Sean Dyche mould so far. In that, well, I'd say he's probably the total opposite of the likes of George Boyd. George Boyd will always give you absolutely everything. He'll run up and down. He's got a very good quite tactical noose, I think. Whereas Brady has not quite fit into that in his performances so far. I think one of the best ways you can get that into him is playing him and almost kind of forcing him to fit into that system. You know, it's a very, probably a very different system, particularly for a player like him. It's a very different system to come in and play. He's probably a lot more used to be having a lot more freedom to express himself, which is you're just not going to have in a Sean Dyche team. That's never going to happen. I'm hopeful and quite confident that we'll be a lot more expressive next season, and I expect to see some more creative players coming in the summer. But whatever we do and whatever happens with that, you're still not going to get attacking players having the likes of a lot of freedom to express themselves. And it's still going to be a very structured team under Sean Dyche. So I think, you know, you can do all the work on the training ground, you can do all this, but the only way you're really going to get that properly and effectively is by giving him that experience of playing in that system. And now when there is that bit less pressure, there's less pressure on him to let the team down almost, and hopefully Sean Dyche can, I think Sean Dyche has lacked confidence a little bit in the last few weeks, and that's probably why he's been a bit more solid with the team and going back to what he knows, is a bit more comfortable with. Hopefully now that risk is reduced and we're looking a lot more safe, he can have that confidence to get him into the team a bit more. And
you've touched there on Boyd, and I think one of the interesting things for next season is going to be, obviously, with Boyd potentially out of contract, obviously rumour that he's turned down a one-year deal as he's seeking 2 years. Rumours of Arfield moving on. You know, you've said that Brady's not really fitting into the Dyche mould, but obviously Dyche brought him in. It looks like maybe the two wide players who really do fit the Dyche winger mould could be leaving. What do you see Dyche doing to sort of solidify the wide positions, Natalie?
I don't think it's a case of solidifying. I think he needs to completely reinvent it. I mean, the wide position is a real struggle this season. And I think if we had, my ideal four in the middle of the park would be Marnie and Hendrick in the middle. So obviously, if Marnie hadn't have got injured, Brady on the left and Goodmunson on the right. But we've not been able to do that through injuries and suspensions and the like. So, you know, you've got to give Dyche a bit of slack here on the basis that he's not been able to pick a team that he possibly could have wanted to. But saying that, if you know, Boyd, I'm not in the branch of complete Boyd haters. I actually think he's brought a lot this season, but I know I'm in the minority. Arfield, I think, is gone, and I think it looks like as well like Dufour's going to go as well. I think it's clear that he's not going to stick around. So we're really, really weak again in the middle of the park. We've got Brady on the left, obviously, but we've got no cover for him. Goodmunson hopefully will get back to strength, so he's on the right, but again, we've got no cover for him either. And assuming that, well, we don't know what's going to happen yet with Joey. Marnie should come back, but you know, he's getting on a bit now, so I'm not entirely sure how many more seasons he's going to have. So we've essentially just got Hendrick and Westwood in the middle. We've only got four. We've got a first team of four and no cover. So for me, Dyche has got a real problem on his hands. I think he has to absolutely get into that transfer market and really bring some players in. Same with the front two as well. But yeah, I think the board's going to be in for an expensive summer. I think we've done fantastically well this season on what we've got, but we are going to potentially see quite a good few members of our squad leave us this summer.
Absolutely, and I think, as you said, you know, it's going to be a lot of work to be done this summer, a lot of action in the transfer market, and Sean Dyche is going to be, I think, a pretty busy man. But I'm sure we're going to cover that a lot over the coming weeks as the season draws to a close, particularly as our, you know, our safety is confirmed mathematically. I'm sure this will get talked about a lot over the last couple of podcasts of the season, and obviously maybe even in a little beginning of the summer special. But there was one last talking point that I think we need to cover from the Middlesbrough game just before we move on to some of the regular features. Obviously, later on in the game, Patrick Bamford, Mr. Violin, got through clean on goal. Michael Keane slipped just behind him.
I love it.
and took him down. It did look like Bamford went down quite easily, but obviously Michael Keane was booked for that. And obviously there's a rule change this season that it is the reason why he was only booked rather than sent off. And I think you've got a pretty good handle on that, Natalie. So we'll let you go through the details.
Yes. Well, there has been a rule change this season. I think most of our listeners will be familiar with the ruling on penalties and the double jeopardy rule. This is completely separate from this. And the ruling for this season is that, and I will make it very clear, actually, in that it's not a last man rule. It's never been a last man rule. It's about denying a goal scoring opportunity. Now, the rules clearly state that if a player commits a professional foul and they're preventing a clear goal scoring opportunity, then it is a red card. However, if that foul is an accidental professional foul, then it is a yellow card only. And that's both outside the box and inside the box. In this situation, yes, Keane brought him down and it was a foul and the free kick was given. However, if you look at the foul itself, Keane clearly trips up over himself and that's what causes him to make that foul. It's therefore an accidental foul and the referee quite rightly gave him a yellow card and not a red.
And there you have it.
Well, there we go. No discussion needed.
I think that could be played to all Borough fans who are disappointed with
the decision. Of the Borough fans have picked up on it as well, actually. I've seen quite a lot on message boards and on Twitter as well, in that a lot of them obviously are frustrated, and I appreciate that. And I think a lot of them have actually picked up on that and realised that, yeah, it is actually, unfortunately, the rule.
As thorough as that explanation was, I'm not really sure it was needed anyway. The referee obviously thought, if this is a clear goal-scoring opportunity, looked up for Patrick Bamford.
Well, Kevin, there's no point. Kevin.
It's not, is it?
Leave the poor lad alone, you know. Has he not suffered
I really hope he doesn't listen. Another thing I thought, very humorous tweet. I'm going to have my own tweet of the week this week, which was someone saying
excuse me.
I'm sorry, Brommers, I'm stealing your territory here, but it was Michael Keane is a hero once again against Middlesbrough with a 4-2 of his fantastic last gasp equaliser around this time last year, and then his hilarious slip and taking out Patrick Bamford this year. So I thought that made me chuckle.
Young Patrick did look most displeased, I think, with the referee's decision.
Maybe he wants to learn the rules as well as find his shooting boots.
I think in his defence, he's spending far too long being forced to play the violin to read the rules.
This is a brutal podcast. There's a very small part of me actually started to really feel sorry for Patrick Bamford. It's very slight, very slight. But honestly, let's give the poor guy a break. We don't want to set him off crying again. Come on.
I hope he's not listening to this on the car home.
On rule changes, I think it can be difficult the first time you see one of these rules that have changed, because sometimes the rule changes are to such obscure situations that it can take you 3/4 of the season to see it.
Yeah,
I think we'll all remember that the confusion at the turf early in the season when an offside was given and it was taken in the team who got the free kick's own half, which was a bit confusing, but there you go. So that means there's just one more thing to cover for Middlesbrough this week, and that's Tweet of the Week. So Natalie, over to you.
The real tweet of the week.
Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week. Tweet of the week, tweet of the week, tweet of the week.
Indeed. Get your thieving mitts off my feature, Kevin Robinson. How dare you? This week's tweet of the week is actually come from our... I can't speak. Kevin, what are you doing to me?
I'm just waiting for the week you're trying to call it. Teats of the week.
I can't even say my own feature. I can't. This is starting. This is becoming as bad a psychological problem as Burnley's away form. I can't.
This is your new catchphrase.
Oh my god. Okay, let's start. My god. Composure. Stop it. Okay. Indeed. Kevin Robinson, you can get your thieving mitts off my feature. This is my section and you're not having it. This week's tweet of the week has come from... My God! I hate this so much. I've got a psychological problem with my feature. Right, stop it. I'm going to do this again properly now. Indeed, we have the proper Tweet of the Week feature now, Kevin. You can get your thieving mitts off it. This week's tweet has been taken as part of our three-word match report that we've been asking for to get your reaction to games and to get a feel of how you thought the 90 minutes went. And this week's tweet comes from Gary Wilson, who simply says, "Job nearly done." And that is so, so very true. We are almost there. We're almost over the line. And I think most of us now can relax and stop fretting and stop looking down the table and start looking at a top 10 finish.
All right. So moving on, but staying with the current week of games, it's obviously time for everyone's favourite feature, Kightley Corner. Michael Kightley did start yet again this week. He was replaced on 18 minutes by Mizzino. Not sure how much of a game he had. I haven't had a chance to watch the highlights yet. However, the Marvins...
Whoa, what?
That's pretty
disgusting lack pretty of poor, dedication.
But just wait, because this segment's getting better this week. Marvin's mention, Marvin came really close. Glanced a header just off target early in the second half. But then another former Burnley player, Dyer's diversion. He scored the equaliser when he's sick for the season against his former side. So Lloyd Dyer, hero this week for Burton, which keeps them a rather impressive 5 points clear of Blackburn, meaning that our new second team look like they could be safe at the expense of Blackburn, which is obviously fantastic news for Burnley fans everywhere.
Dyer diversion is my favourite of the names so far.
I know, I think I quite like that as well. I've actually got a really close friend who's a Bristol fan, and he's just sent me, while we're actually recording, he's just sent me a text saying that he's got a feeling that they might be relegating your beloved local rivals on Monday if all goes well. So clearly we're all going to be Bristol fans on Monday and cheer them on to try and see. I don't even know, Birdie, you might be able to ask Papa Bird to confirm this, but it must be a long, long time ago now since Burnley were two divisions above Blackburn. It must be 60s, maybe? 50s?
It'll be a good while. That'll take quite a bit of trolling through the history books.
Nah, I just ask Papa Bird, he'll know it off the top of his head. He probably will.
Fire him a text later. Not quite as smooth a link as I originally intended now, but you did get another question that fits in quite nicely with Blackburn getting relegated from the Championship. And that is, which teams would we like to see leave the Championship in the other direction and come join Burnley in the Premier League next season? The top two is probably...
It's going to be Brighton and Newcastle.
Yeah, it's probably fixed. Obviously, Brighton sit top at the moment.
A big call, that, James.
I know. I've said this before, I've been called many four-letter words, but luckily it doesn't involve us this time, so I can probably avoid that. But currently, Brighton sit top after 41 games played with 86 points and a 34 goal difference, with Newcastle just behind them on 84 points after the same number of games.
There's 10 However, points, isn't there, between them and third?
Yeah, there is. So it's then Huddersfield, 10 points back. They do have a game in hand, though, but it's probably not going to be enough to catch up, especially when their goal difference is only four. But the playoff spots is very interesting. So I think, assuming we can say that Brighton and Newcastle are dead certs to be joining us next season in the Premier League, Huddersfield, Reading, Leeds and Sheffield Wednesday currently occupy the playoff spots. Fulham are just 2 points out of there.
Yeah,
with a better goal difference than all of the teams currently in a playoff spot. And then probably the only team that can make it. Derby in eighth, and they're on 62.
Yeah, they're not going to... Yeah, they're too far behind, back, I think, so aren't they?
It's between those five teams. Firstly, who do you think is going to make it through to the playoffs? And secondly, who do you think is going to be the ultimate victor? We'll start with you, Natalie, and then move on to Kev.
I think first and foremost we need to thank, let me just get our things up again, just proving to our listeners that we're obviously incredibly organised.
One quick aside is that I'm really glad that Brighton are going to be joining us, because I really enjoyed the battle for promotion with those last year. I was really, really disappointed that they
missed out,
They missed out, not just because it was Middlesbrough who I didn't want to get promoted, but purely because I thought I really, really enjoyed that battle with them, and I think it would have been a great top two to come up.
Yeah, I'm completely in agreement with that. I think for me, Newcastle, you've got to assume that with just one year's absence from the Premier League, that they will hopefully come back. Well, I say hopefully, you would expect them to come up and probably do a pretty decent job of trying to stay up. But from purely selfish reasons, we should be looking, certainly as it's only our second season in the Premier League, we should be looking at the weakest possible size to come up that possibly can, because we want the top three sides who come up to occupy the bottom three spots next season, because then we are outside it and we can potentially get into a third season. So, like I say, I think Newcastle are probably, out of all of the three promoted sides, will be the ones who've got most of a chance of staying up. Brighton will give it a good shout, and I agree with Kevin, I'd be really pleased to see them come up, but again, be their first time in the Premier League, and I wouldn't be surprised if they were maybe not as weak as we were in 2009, but certainly they'll be no stronger than we were in 2014, so they should find life a little bit tough. So in that sense, I would probably look at whoever finishes sixth, because they're the ones who tend to potentially struggle. I think Huddersfield will struggle. I think Wednesday would probably. I don't want to see Leeds come up, and I don't mean that. And I've got some people who are Leeds fans. I think from a club perspective, that's a great story to get them back at such a big club back in the Premier League. But I think they have a chance of staying up as well. So this is purely from selfish reasons. I don't want to see Fulham or Leeds come up. I'm going to say either Huddersfield or Wednesday to come up with Brighton and Newcastle, because I think if that happens, there's probably going to be two of those who go straight back down, and therefore that means we're only fighting to avoid one relegation spot. And I think we just need to just say, just before I move on to Kevin, it was actually Michael Burley who sent us this question in, so thank you, Michael.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. I think I'd agree. I'd probably say Huddersfield. I don't know much about any of these clubs, but given that they are the only team up there that haven't played in the Premier League, I'd probably say that you'd got to assume they've probably got the least impressive infrastructure. I think that was one of our big things when we first, not just first came off, I think we're still adapting the infrastructure to that Premier League level, and things like the training ground and everything that goes around it, the club support level and the hospitality and the corporate stuff, everything that comes with that Premier League, being a Premier League club. And while, you know, the likes of Leeds and Sheffield Wednesday and Reading and Fulham, the players aren't going to have that history of playing in the Premier League like we've got this year and what we've really benefited from. But just everything that comes around with the club, you know, things like the training ground, things like the corporate side, they might not have that massive impact on the pitch, but it does give you something. And having that experience around the club and in the boardroom and wherever it might be, of being a Premier League club previously, It's going to give you that bit of percentage extra boost, which is obviously something what we don't want to have. So, yeah, I agree, Natalie. Probably Huddersfield wouldn't be at the level what we were in 2009, but they might be at the level we were at 2 years ago, which is what you've got to hope. So they'd be my pick, in addition to, obviously, the Brighton and Huddersfield, and Newcastle. The playoffs, like you say, it's really tight. Fulham have been, they've probably been playing better than any of those five teams. So I'd probably suggest they could break in at the expense of maybe Sheffield Wednesday. In fact, I'm just looking at the stats now, and out of the last 10 games, Fulham's lost 2, Sheffield Wednesday have lost 4. So if it's a battle between those two, you're probably going to say that on form, you've got to put money on Fulham. And just very quickly as well, just to jump back a bit, I did ask Dave Roberts on Twitter, who I know is a podcast listener, and he's very he knows every stat going when it comes to Burnley. When the last time Burnley and Blackburn were two leagues apart, and he reckons it's around the mid 70s, and he reckons it was 1974 and 1975. So thanks for that, Dave. Hopefully you're right.
It is indeed right. I've checked it myself. Looking at the team who's going to come up through the playoffs, I'd like to think Fulham can sneak into the picture. I don't know why, but I've always just sort of quite liked them. Got a quaint little ground. I think it's You know, they've got a neutral section. I think they're just like really harmless. Like, does anyone dislike Fulham?
Fulham was a great away day last season. Really, really enjoyed that.
Yeah, the Fulham away day was obviously the birth of the greatest chant to ever have lived, the Ben Mee chant.
Ben Mee.
Unfortunately, our players seemed to refuse to acknowledge it and came up with their own awful Ben Mee song.
Sorry.
You can stop whenever you're ready, promise. so I'd like to see Fulham sneak in. And then to actually come up, again, probably wouldn't mind Fulham, but anyone other than Leeds?
Do you know what? There's some really decent teams, like that top eight. And even, I guess, if we're not really that bothered about them, but even the top nine, if you include Preston as well. You're right. Apart from, well, Leeds, yeah, okay, I get that one. But there's literally some pretty unoffensive size in that top nine, isn't there? There's nobody that we've, obviously Derby we've got a bit of a beef with, but only that's because of Shackle. But the rest of them, it's like, I really wouldn't mind who comes up.
I don't like Derby's fans. I should stop you there.
Yeah, that's true.
Awful fans.
It is. I would say, from, like I was saying before about the selfish point about relegation again, I think there's some big names, but there's some big names who have been out of the spotlight and without backing in top flight football for quite some time now. So I think that there should be, out of the three that do come up, at least two of them should occupy those relegation slots, looking at that. So in that sense, I wouldn't mind Sheffield Wednesday going up, because I think they're probably the ones who are more likely to go straight back down.
Oh, if we're talking most likely to go back down, Huddersfield, bring them up right now.
Do you think so? Do you think Huddersfield? Yeah. Huddersfield have got a bit more money though, haven't they, than Wednesday? They might be able to spend a little bit more.
Don't know. They'll come up though, and they'll have that tag attached to them, like we always do.
True.
Oh, little Huddersfield, bless them, in the Premier League. How will they cope?
Oh, we had that in 2009.
Can they do it? Oh, look, they're doing really well. Oh, now they're not. Look, going to get absolutely bullied. True. Could be the worst points total ever. Look at them. Little Huddersfield, bless them.
I think you could say that. Maybe you're right. Sheffield Wednesday have got quite a bigger history, haven't they? But
decent sized history. So to move on from that, there's only one thing left to do. Unfortunately, we're going to have to hand over to Kevin. To cover off the Predictions League.
Predictions. It's the Prediction League.
Well, I'm actually quite happy to skip this feature this week. So if you all want to just...
No. That's not how it works.
Well, this... we've got some shocking news. Sorry, go on, James.
Firstly, just to interrupt, yet again... The week he would be unbearable, Jamie's not here.
I know, he's timed this so badly, hasn't he? The only 2 weeks
timed
he's got
it excellently. For some reason, he's thought making a living is important, and he's missed the opportunity to go up. So back to you, Kevin.
Back to me, yeah. And it's shocking, truly shocking news that the only person to score points this week was Jamie Smith. And not only that, Jamie Smith scored full points. Myself and Natalie both went for a defeat. James went for a 2-1 win.
Hang on a minute. Before you go any further, can we make it very clear to our listeners who maybe missed last week's episode? I went for a defeat because I brought back reverse psychology, which has pretty much got us to safety. So I sacrificed any chance of glory in the Predictions League just for the sake of our team. And I don't think you're giving me enough credit for that, Kevin Robinson.
Whatever the reason, you went for a defeat.
Fine.
Natalie went for a defeat, I went for a defeat. James, obviously, went for a win. Jamie Smith went for a 0-0 draw. Who knew that he was he could actually predict results and scores. So that has dramatically, we've got a dramatic twist as we approach the end of the season. But for the first time ever, for the first time since week one, the order of the table has changed. I'm still top, of course, with 21 points. Oh, please. I'm still top with 21 points, but now James, you've been knocked down. James has spent the whole season in second place, but Jamie's overtaken him. Jamie's now second with 11 points. James, third on 9 points. And Natalie, still 4 points. As you've been since, you've now, well, it's a long time since you scored any points. So now you've got 4 points in last place.
It's starting to hit home now. We've actually had a couple of suggestions from our listeners as to what my forfeit will be. I don't actually remember this forfeit thing. I don't think that actually happened. I think people are misinterpreting the rules. But we added this week's, and forgive me, whoever listener sent this in, I'm really sorry, I can't recall it to front of mind. It's quite a bit down my timeline. But somebody sent in a tweet saying that my forfeit should be that the week after it's confirmed that my relegation, for want of a better word, I have to do Kiteley Corner. I'm like, no, that is the worst forfeit ever. So I'm not.
I think
doing
you
that.
Need to. I think you need to record a jingle for Kiteley Corner.
I'm not recording a jingle. I'm not doing Kiteley Corner.
Personally, so, I'm all for a live rendition of some songs at the live event.
No. As Jamie Smith quite rightly pointed out, that's more of a punishment for everybody else who's listening to it rather than me having to do it. So I think that's not good. Besides, these forfeits aren't a thing. I don't remember anybody saying anything about any forfeits. It's not a thing. We're fine.
It's very, very convenient. Can I just clarify as well, Bromwich? You talked about being relegated. Just to clarify, listeners, because I know everyone likes Bromwich, she will still be with us next season. Yeah. We're not booting her off to a rival
podcast.
Somewhere else.
She's, I hope not, anyway.
She's staying with us.
if that's someone happens, go quiet, can... listeners, then you know that he was lying.
We have to relegate to a lesser feature than Tweet of the Week, though.
No. Hey, no.
Can such a poor predictor really be trusted to pick the best tweet?
That's...
That's a good point. That's a very good
think
thing.
About taking my feature off me. I will fight.
Maybe she can be relegated to Kiteley Corner.
No, I'm not doing Kiteley Corner as a forfeit.
That is a promotion. Which is why it's my feature. but just to defend my performance this week, obviously, eternal optimist.
Indefensible.
Going against the no-nay negative stereotype. Obviously, when we do win next week, it was back to business as usual. Just thought I'd let Jamie have a week at second just to mix it up.
So generous.
I know. That's the kind of person I am, Kevin.
Well... Yes. Should we do this week's predictions then? We've got a very tough game coming up.
Predictions. I've given up with predictions. I can't even deal.
I've advised any Burnley fans not to look at Everton's home record at the moment. If you have any hope of getting any kind of result at Goodison Park, do not by in any way look at
Everton's
home record.
It'll be so Burnley. We've said this in so many games, but it will be so Burnley for us to get that result at Goodison. I can just feel it.
It's probably also really important to note at this point that we've not really talked about Everton on Saturday, and there's a very good reason for that. We chose to talk about your topics that would actually provide some variation to the podcast rather than discussing the same three issues about who will play on the wing, who will play up front, can we win away from home? And also not to touch on the depressing fact that Everton are looking rather good at the moment. So
you say rather good, James. I've just looked at the stats, and Everton are top in the home form record at the moment. They've played in their last seven games, they've won seven and conceded five, scored 26 and conceded five. So that's a goal difference of 21 in their last seven home games.
That's not at all depressing, that, Kev. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Just looking at the last three at home, you know, 4-2 against Leicester, a little blot on the record, actually conceded. 4-0 against Hull, 3-0 against West Brom. It's probably safe to say that they're feeling pretty comfortable at home, but they have taken on a bit of an hour roll away from home.
Yeah, but you say that, though, you know, we have got quite a strong defence, so I'm not expecting anything other than a loss. I'm not expecting the floodgates to open. I still think it'll be 1-2-0 maximum, and I think we might even score as well, so...
Are we still doing reverse psychology just because...
Possibly.
I'm concerned now that that means it's going to be like 6-7-0.
I was going to say that you missed out, talking of 6, you did miss out Everton 6, Bournemouth 3.
But Bournemouth can't defend for end of this war then on our friendly podcast. Bournemouth can't defend. We can defend a lot better than Bournemouth can, so we're not going to concede 6.
But Bournemouth can score better than we can, so swings and roundabouts. But rather than just try and depress ourselves about how many goals Everton have been scored at home, we'll actually move on to some actual predictions. We'll get you out of the way early, Kev, because then we all know what the actual result's going to be.
Yeah, that's true.
I'd love to do a James and be positive. A second ago I was going to go for a 3-0 defeat, but I'm not. I'm going to be optimistic and go for a 2-0 defeat.
Very, very optimistic. Natalie, is it reverse psychology again, or?
Oh, I've got a really bad feeling about this. It's, you know, we've not won all season on the road. We've got 4 points so far. Everton are just going to be so strong, and I think we'll defend resolutely, but it'll just be too much. And Lukaku flying through on our defence is just going to be massively scary. So I can't see anything other than a Burnley loss, I'm afraid. The reverse psychology is well in swing, and I think Burnley are going to lose 2-1.
Well, personally, because of my position in the predictions league being jeopardised after last week, I'm going to modify my prediction a little bit. Still more optimistic than everyone else. I'm going to say we're going to steal a 1-1 draw. We'll go ahead early on. Andre Gray, definitely. But we'll invite some late pressure and Everton will take advantage to equalise. Just as we feel like the away win's within our grasp, it'll be cruelly taken from us.
Oh, indeed. Do you think that at this any point this season, Birdie will be able to bring back your Andre Gray hat-trick?
Well, I had the Andre Gray hat-trick on Saturday. 100
to
1.
Really?
So furious with Dash. No, Dash. Dash's fault. Taking him off on 60 minutes. Could have easily banged a hat-trick in that last half an hour. Easy.
Yeah.
But just to soften the blow, I did have second and third in the Grand National, so.
Well, there you go.
Swings and roundabouts.
I'm sure our listeners will be delighted to hear that.
Well, unfortunately, Phil Bird had the winner. Not only did he have the winner, he had the winner several months ago at Antipo. So clearly I should have taken his advice. I could have had 1-2-3. And imagine how rich I'd be now. But I'm not, so I'm still poor.
So there's no point doing that podcast, that section we did a minute ago about who's going to come up, because you just got your dad on.
Yeah, that's true. Papa Bird can tell us who's going to come up.
True. He's probably sussed it out. Probably got it written down somewhere. Probably even knows the score in the playoff final.
He's probably got a hidden envelope somewhere on the mantelpiece.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, after the final whistle, he'll pull it out like a, and here we are, the big reveal.
Yeah, it's correct. Down to goal scorers and minutes. probably hope he doesn't listen anyway, so he won't know how great. We've just locked him up. So
I think it's quite nice to see that even in Jamie's absence, that the end of our podcast descends into chaos. We've lost the thread of thought here, guys. Let's pull it back.
But importantly, speaking of Jamie, Jamie's not here this week. For some reason, as I said earlier, believes earning a living is more important than the No Never podcast. Questionable logic, I know. But he's recorded a little prediction for us, and he's looking obviously to grow on his result from last week and maybe solidify second place. But this is prediction.
Hello everyone, Jamie here. Sorry for skiving off again this week. I'm sure my fans are missing me a lot. I'd love to say I'll be back next week, but unfortunately I'm going to be away again. Good news is that I got a prediction right for the first time in ages, closing the gap to Kevin. Everton away up next. Very tough game this one. Everton extremely strong at home. I think they've won about 7 in a row in the league. Romelu Lukaku very, very good at Goodison. I think it's going to be a very difficult game this one. Also suspect Burnley might just start to switch off a little bit since safety is pretty much assured now. So I'm going to predict a defeat, I'm afraid. I'm going to go Everton 3, Burnley 1.
So despite starting so positively, podcast has ended with all of us, with none of us, sorry, going for a win at Everton. So back to form. Before we go, very quickly, just a reminder that tickets are available now for our live podcast. It's at the Turf Moor. I've said it again, the Turf Moor. It's at Turf Moor. After the West Brom game on Saturday the 6th of May, there's lots of interactive things for you to get involved with. You'll be voting for your known and ever player of the season. You can have your say on the game and the season as a whole. We're going to have a Q&A and you can test your Claret's knowledge in our quiz. Tickets are free and you can get yours now. So the link is in the show notes.
So I think that's about everything for this week. Obviously, a few little different things this week, just to try and mix it up from the same will we win away sort of chatter and who's going to play up front and on the wing. Firstly, thank you to Kevin and Natalie for joining me this week. Thank you to Isabella and Toby yet again for their intro, the first of the Kickstarter intros. Obviously, we've got a few more to come before the end of the season. Thank you to Rick for his fantastic artwork, as always. And thank you to all of you for listening. I've been James Bird. This has been the No Name Ever podcast. Good night.
That because we're pretty much safe now, so it was more of a... Actually, in this sense, was this the right thing to do? Something appears to have happened to Kevin.
Oh, sorry, I didn't realise. I thought I was muted. Aaron, no. Let me have a look. He's just brought in some little marshmallow things he's been...
Stop it. I can't deal with the food.
I thought you were saying wow at Brommer's being negative.
No, I wasn't saying wow at Brommer's opinion.
It was like... So probably safe. And you go like,
she says
wow.
Something sensible. Oh, my God.
Birdie, that's exactly what I thought he was doing. So I was like, all right. Sock it.
I've just made... Patrick Bamford, you've never, ever scored a Premier League goal despite playing for five different clubs. You were joking.
It's getting a bit harsh.
It is. God. What did you start there, Kevin? Okay, we're reining Kevin in now, listeners. We're just going to chill him out for a small while.
Well, Jamie, you did... James.
That's my most favourite moment of the podcast ever.
James is gone.
James has hung up. It's great.
He's recorded a little prediction for us, but this is prediction.
We're only going to get beat 10-0.
Oh, wow. Bit negative, Jamie. Anyway. Thank you to Rick for his fantastic artwork, as always. That is everyone, isn't it?
Yeah.